session yesterday on publishing, and I've authored things, and I know that some of y'all have, but I thought as we start assessing our patients, because this is really where we're going, is better assessment by the nurse at the bedside. And just like I have my story with my patient, and I've got other stories, it would be so nice if we could accumulate data from the things that you find as you go and you look for serum ferritins. So my email address is esamandreak@uams.edu. So you've got my name on stuff, so just you've got how to spell it and all, and just at uams.edu. So if y'all start finding some things that you think are unique, and we seldom think anything we do is unique. If you start finding some good stories about what you have discovered with high ferritins, it would make a great journal article. And I'd be happy to put that through and put all of you that send me things that we use as a co-authors on that. But it would be a good journal article for the ANNA journal, just of good nursing assessment. Lots of questions. Here's the first one. How is the best way to manage patients in an acute setting who come in with hematocrits greater than 40 or hemoglobin too high and are on Epogen? We currently hold them, but holding's not good. What's the answer? You know, my experience in the acute arena is that when our patients go in the hospital, it's like kind of putting leeches on them. They may have come in high, but they're going to go out low. So my best advice to you would be to kind of cut the dose 50% or discuss it with your physician or your nurse practitioner, but that would be my goal. We used to have a problem, and I can't say it's 100% fixed, but our acute nurses are managed, you know, the DaVita unit owns the acute program at the hospital. And so I never understood why we couldn't get this process back and forth so that our patients got drugged while they were in the hospital. And finally, going through a system CQI approach, we found that the nurses in the hospital weren't allowed to give medications from the hospital. But they do have access to put in orders. And so we empowered our acute nurses to put in the EPO order. So the chronic unit communicates with the acute unit, and it's a two-way street. And they put in the usual dose. I don't let them put in the iron dose, because if patients are in the hospital, they well could have infection, et cetera. And so I ask them to remind the doctors that they're on iron, and let them continue it. But we do continue the same dose. But that acute nurse that recognizes that it's too high, you really need a protocol to cover your tissue while you're there. But if they go in high, at least cut the dose 25%. That would make the government happy. And they really don't look at what's going on in the hospital. So depending on how high it is, you may make a decision on that. But you know you're going to get a lot more blood draw. There's some kind of process going in that's going to affect their erythropoiesis probably while they're there. So depending on what it was and how quick it got there, because remember, how many points should you go up in a month? 2. So if you're trending up and they, you know, if they were 11 and now they're 14, you know, I'd cut it by 50%. But if they had been running in the 12s and they were up 13.5, I probably would cut it by 25%, or I may not even cut it at all, knowing that we're going to get blood every day and gobs of it. Will you ask the group how many are still using the dextran molecule products? Okay, to make this person happy, if you're using iron dextran, which I know there's some still being used, anybody in this room? Okay. There's somebody in the back. I quit using the iron dextran simply because there's a black box warning on it, and simply because I've had some anaphylaxis. I've never had any anaphylaxis and I don't have any experience with vinifer, so I'm sorry I can't say about vinifer, but I have had some reactions with Furlicit, but the reactions are usually when they're given too fast. Even sometimes they're given too fast accidentally, and then other times they're given too fast for that particular patient. Like one of my first ones, it was actually the attorney general for the state I had in my CKD clinic, and fortunately she's That's very sweet. And but she dropped her blood pressure, et cetera. And on those patients, when I'm going to treat them again, I usually will drip it in. But she was getting 125 or maybe 250. So if you get to bigger doses, you need to drip it. You need to drip it slower. But normally we push 62.5 milligrams over 4 minutes, 125 over 10 minutes. Bigger than 125, we drip it. Or if they've acted ugly the last time we gave 125, we drip it. That'll teach them. So that's kind of how I handle it. And we have I've never had an anaphylaxis, but I get that drop in blood pressure, that feeling bad if it's given too fast. Now, I will tell you that the reason we went to the 31.25 and do it weekly is because, you know, when you really get down and dig, no telling what you're going to find out. And what I found out was that I thought I was being nice doing 62.5 every other week for patients that just needed a little bit, or 125 every other treatment every other week. But 125, 10 minutes, if your nurse hasn't gotten back to continually push that through, 10 minutes at shift change is an eternity. And if your tech says, hey, you haven't given all the iron, hey, you haven't given all the iron, I found more than our unit that the iron then just gets given to the garbage can. Because you have, one or the other things happen. Three things. They can either stand there for that length of time, whatever they need, and push it. They push it too quick, or they just throw it away. So that little dose, 31.25, if you don't have a problem with drawing it up twice, or even the 62.5, which is 4 minutes, you know, 4 minutes doesn't sound like long. It's a long time in a dialysis unit. But 31.25, they can just push it in right there when they hook it up, and then it's done. 62.5, they usually push half of it, come back and push the other half. Okay. How about, what ill effect on patients would occur if you gave IV iron to the infected patient? Well, that's one of those theoretical questions. The thought would be that you give them iron-rich blood and you could make the infection a little bit worse. Don't know whether that plays into it hugely or not, because not all bacteria like iron-rich blood, so it would depend upon what the infection is. But if you can't find the infection, if you don't know what's going on and you get that correlated by whoever you want to, you know, it'll either show itself or it'll still stay occult. So I have really problems with these long-term infections, you know, but you do have, we find grafts that have been infected, non-used grafts, old ones, that have these occult infections that make the ferritins high. You just have underlying poor outcomes all across that patient. But that's what you worry about. You worry about worsening that infection, but I can't stand here and tell you that that happens all the time. Would one IV iron dose show ill effects? No, I don't think so at all. There's a study from Taiwan where we think we have it bad. They have it really bad, at least they did when the study was done. Where they kept, if they got to a hemoglobin above, well, they did it on hematocrits above 30, they had to hold the iron. And so they had no limits on how much IV iron they can give. And their baseline ferritins were up around 800. And what they did, they gave all of their patients iron, significant amount of iron, every week. And they got their hemoglobins or their hematocrits up. And after a year, they only had a small increase in their serum ferritins. I don't think one iron dose will have an effect, but one iron dose also is not going to tell you if it works. You're going to have to give it for a month to 6 weeks. If you're worried about it, I would talk to your prescriber, and then if you do it and you're still worried about it, I'd keep checking with that patient, but I've really not had that problem. If the patient has positive cultures, how long do you wait before restarting your IV iron? Well, I'll be honest, we're not organized enough to hold it in the first place, except if I'm given a dose of Vanc with somebody that has bacteremia and really is sick, because our first line drug is a cephalosporin. So we give cephalosporins if we just think, hey, something's funky's going on with you, it could be infectious. And we've done a lot of the research on cephalosporin. So if I'm given and starting active drug, right, that treatment, I don't give it. But once you've got a few doses of drug on board, you're okay. And you're only given the iron generally once a week unless you're in some type of repletion type schedule and your patient's depleted. So if you were really organized, I would hold it at least a week and then start back. But I'm not based, that's just a shoot from the hip opinion. You have questions for you, or you want me to keep going? Okay, you want to take one?
Can everyone hear me through this? Someone wanted the website repeated, the website for the different articles. It's hdcn.com, and that stands for hypertension, dialysis, and clinical nephrology. The triage checklist and the other checklists that we use are on that site if you need to see that. Another question, I have a new patient not on EPO with iron studies towards the end of the low target range. Should they be receiving iron doses if not receiving EPO? That's a really good question. We have in the past given a little bit of iron just, did I just lose this? Just to bring their T-sets up to a comfortable range. There have been some studies of patients just receiving iron and not being on EPO and their hemoglobin continues to climb. So I think there is a need for iron even if their hemoglobin is in a normal range. Carnitor, the use of Carnitor, how often do you consider it and how long do you use it to see if it's being effective? We have probably about 10 patients on Carnitor and in 8 of them we have seen an improvement in hemoglobin. And we wait at least 3 to 4 months to see if their hemoglobin does improve. One big thing with that is don't ever recheck the serum carnitine level again, because if it becomes back normal, then Medicare will not pay for the drug in the future.
I've got a question. What do you do if your patient is allergic to Furlicid and Venofer? Depends on what you call an allergy. I have some patients that just kind of feel yucky or itch or something, and if I really need to, I may pre-medicate them with steroids or Benadryl. But on patients that have had, you know, if I had somebody that really had a close to anaphylactic reaction, and I'm talking back to iron dextran, I put them on PO iron, and I will tell you that my, you can laugh, but I've seen it work. I thought, I follow 90 patients that are in my CKD clinic that I have on IV iron or usually sub-Q Aranesp. And my medical director actually taught me that you can bring a TSAT from single digits up to 20 with PO iron in patients that are troublesome. I've seen it happen, but those patients aren't really losing. But if you don't want to give it, if your patient is truly allergic, then you can't give it. And I use Fiasol. I use it for two reasons. I'm one of those people that get all those samples those drug companies will send me. And because my patients love to get samples. And Fiasol does, but it works. It's more easily, it's over the counter. It's easily tolerated and better tolerated than the ferrous sulfate. But if I really couldn't give it, I would do that. And I do the same thing with my PD patients. I have more of my PD patients on PO iron, which is another question. And we give them IV iron when they come in for their clinic visits. So usually 125 if they're real low, some of them 62.5. If they've had a bleed or some kind of funky something's gone on with them and they live close enough, we'll bring them back in and give them 125 twice a month. Again, that iron is bioavailable, readily available, and it tends to work for us because they're not having losses. Got a question on reimbursement. You know that I've always known that we're too dumb to know, or at least I am, you may be smarter than I am, how much EPO is too much EPO. Well, the federal government in their wisdom has stepped in to tell us. And they say that if you are giving over 500,000 units of EPO a month and you bill them for it, they will think, oh, you have made a mistake. You know, you've put your decimal in the wrong place, whatever. And they will not pay that claim. So depending on how many treatments, you're talking about 38,000 units 3 times a week. And I will tell you that I've had patients in my unit that are more than that because they were following a company protocol. And the doctors and I talked about it and we said, well, crud, and it just wasn't worth it to fight about it. So those patients really need to be looked at. But I would encourage you to go back and look at your patients that are requiring that much EPO. I mean, either they've got dead bone marrow, they're bleeding, you're missing functional iron deficiency because you've been holding at a ferritin of whatever, because usually it's 500 to 800. And, you know, ferritins, it was probably never meant for us to hold iron at any certain level. But you have to have a protocol. And if you have a protocol in your unit, you have to follow it. You're bound by law to follow it. But we as patient advocates should be doing that assessment all along, not just now. And going back to that patient, seeing what's going on, and going to the prescriber and saying, can I give a trial? And one of the tricks will be, how do you communicate to your with your doctors? And I know I've had a number of medical directors, and you know, my first one, Tom Goper, I had a big need to tell, and he didn't have a big need to hear. And we have I had dinner with him last night. We have a great working relationship. But I knew that my need was because I was novice in the role, and he was comfortable with me and comfortable with patients, and he didn't have a big need to know. On the other hand, I just finished one of my fellows, was my medical director for the last few years after she got out of fellowship, and she's just gone into private practice. She's also one of my best friends. She had a huge need to know, because when she got to that patient, if she didn't know what was going on, she felt like there was something wrong with her. She could have been a great nurse. But she called me every time she got in the car. So, I mean, she was, I talked to her multiple times a day, and frequently hear her and her kids are at my house on the weekend. So we talk patients all the time. So you have to find out, how do you talk to the people who are your prescribers? Frequently, just fragmented sentences in an email. Ferritins, you know, if the doctor knows up front you're going to be assessing ferritins, then you give them a list. Ferritin this, stays in this range, have talked to the patient, can't find anything, can I continue iron? I find doctors respond really well to emails. Do whatever you need to take care of your patients. Okay, what do I do with HIV positive patients who don't respond to iron and elevated ESA doses? I treat them just like everybody else. I'm probably going to ignore the ferritin a little bit and give low doses unless I see that they've got some type of opportunistic problem. I've got a few HIV patients, and I don't find that I have huge problems with them. But if they really are, you know, if your dose is, if you get a jump, like if their ferritin usually, let's say it's high, let's say it's 600, and all of a sudden it's 1,000 and you didn't do anything with your iron, then hey, maybe something's going on and they are developing a secondary infection. But you're going to expect them to have a little bit higher ferritins than the rest of the patient population. Slides available. I can't give them to you from me, but the people from Fallon Medical will help you, and they will be on the web page that you can download at least the printout. But if you want slides, the Fallon people outside the door will help you with that. And I agree with you. I love the physiology slides. If the iron indices indicate a need for iron but the hemoglobin is high, do you give iron? If I was going to do it in that, I would give iron, but I'd back off on the EPO. Again, it's a balance. If it's much over 13, I might wait till it trends down a little bit, because you've probably lowered your EPO dose. But again, it's that balance. You hope to find it and fix it as it's going up, but it certainly gets your attention when it's too high. So it'll take a while for you to get that balance in line. But yes, I go ahead and treat, but I would treat at a low dose, and I'd back off on the EPO. If you don't change your EPO more than once a month, why do you check the hemoglobin so frequently? Well, just because we can, but also because it helps. You know, if you have it in one snapshot period of time, you really don't know what happened in between. So again, that is a trending dose. And for me, it helps to see that it's going up. For instance, one of the reasons I might change a dose quicker than not is because, remember, two hemoglobin points a month. So if I'm going up quicker than that, I'm going to wrench the dose down. Y'all have some diehards here, so I'll continue with the questions, but I know y'all have to go. If you're giving a weekly iron replacement, when do you recommend a lab test for your TSAT? What we do is we give our irons on Monday and we draw labs on Monday or Tuesday if they're Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So you have a whole week since your last dose. And as Debbie mentioned, with the newer irons, sometimes it's not as big an issue. But since you give it later, you're drawing your lab pre-dialysis and you are given your iron during dialysis, you have a full week. And that should be fine. At what point do you hold iron if the serum ferritin is elevated above 800? It depends. It depends on the patient. Always go back to your patient because I have lots of patients, as does Dr. Fishbane and Dr. Foley from looking at the transcript. It's not that you stop, but that you look and see what's going on with the patients because some patients certainly need IV iron even above a ferritin of 800. What test would you order for a patient with no identifiable iron source? No identifiable source of infection or inflammation. If I had a baseline CRP, I'll get it. If the patient has a catheter, sometimes I'll just draw a blood culture because even though you would think somebody that was septic would show it, I find sometimes that that's not always the case, that I can catch it quicker. You could look at your white blood cell count and see, are the white cells elevated? Look at that albumin and the TIBC and see if those are down. But you kind of look at the whole picture and then you're making a guess. Our time is up. If I haven't gotten to your question and you want to talk, feel free to come on up here to the front and I'll be happy to answer questions and so will Debbie. Thank you very much.